celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ballgame and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsmen 5A state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Brady hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
It is Friday, and this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Your home for next week's NCAA men's basketball tournament. We'll have the first four games from Dayton on Tuesday and Wednesday at 6:30. And then wall-to-wall coverage of the opening round of the tournament Thursday and Friday. And, of course, all the way until we decide a national champion. Right here, 96.1 WSBT. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Our program presented, as always, by our longtime sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Bethel College and Bethel College Athletics, offering 29 intercollegiate teams with a faith-based approach on and off the field. Also, they're the sponsors of coverage of Penn at Semi-State tomorrow at 3:30. Carmel and Penn right here on WSBT Radio. And we're also brought to you by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Great to have you with us on this Friday. Hope you have a great weekend. Want to start the program by wishing my daughter Logan a happy 17th birthday tomorrow. Going to do a little celebrating tonight. Looking forward to that. 17 years old. When did that happen?
Wow.
Pretty crazy. Oh, I'm just thinking about how old your grandkids are now. It's just stunning how quickly time goes by. In fact, I was just having a conversation down in the WSBT News 22 newsroom with WNDU celebrating Maureen McFadden retiring today. And best wishes to her on her retirement after nearly 40 years on the air. Today's her last day. I asked, when was it Cindy Ward retired from WSBT? And it's been almost 4 years since Cindy left the airwaves. Where has time gone? Unbelievable. Well, I have an update on something we talked about yesterday. You know how from time to time I get some undercover secret audio?
Okay.
I do my detective work.
Right.
Well, allegedly, I don't know what the time frame was, but this audio is from a conversation in the South Bend Tribune offices, sports offices. I didn't realize you guys had some sophisticated conversations in that office. Outside of sports.
Never.
Never? Yeah. So I don't know if this is maybe Al Lessar doing the talking. I'm not sure, but maybe you can tell us what this all means. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, here you go. This, if you were listening to yesterday's program, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Uncle Jay, can I go swimming in the cement pond?
Oh, I reckon so, Jethro. But this ain't like the swimming hole back home. You can't go in there without no clothes on.
I can't?
No, sir.
I don't know what that was all about. Was that Al Lessar? Can you confirm or deny?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Maybe that was a young Carter Curls that was jumping in the cement pond. You weren't with us yesterday. Never mind. It's not worth explaining once again. But that's the latest breaking news we have from the South Bend Tribune Sports Office. I think it was the same person the tape Bobby Knight in the locker room years ago that taped that particular audio. They get around. That's for sure. All right, let's get this program started.
Be quick, but don't hurry.
It's time for Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats Quick Hitters.
Life moves pretty fast.
From 96.1 WSBT.
Let's go while we're young.
Well, I guess Mike Bray wanted to start a basketball season with an ACC game. Well, we now know who the Irish play. Now keep in mind, this is the first game. No non-conference games leading into this matchup. November 6th, the Notre Dame basketball opener is in Chapel Hill against the North Carolina Tar Heels. 14 teams will be in action in ACC conference play. Duke is the odd team out. There's 15 teams. They'll be taking part in that normal classic that involves some of the blue bloods to get the college basketball season underway. So we now know the next Notre Dame basketball game of the regular season, Notre Dame at North Carolina. So your reaction is?
You have to be careful what you wish for.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of this. I don't like starting the year with a conference game anyway. The idea, now that we know they're playing North Carolina.
Well, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I thought the upside is you're going to know exactly what your team going to need to work on. And we got into, too bad the exhibition games don't do that for you.
True.
But very interesting.
To say the least.
But I don't know that if you move that game to a different part of the schedule that Notre Dame would necessarily win that game.
Well, maybe there will be an ultimate surprise for North Carolina, although exhibition games tell a bit of a tale. If there are grad transfer or coming to Notre Dame, North Carolina will have a little something different to worry about. But there you go, folks. Notre Dame at North Carolina, November 6th, to begin the regular season. And just going by Twitter, and you can't base everything on Twitter, the reaction has been thumbs down from most fans to this idea. I wonder if the evolution of the ACC network also has something to do with this. You got to fit 20 conference games in now.
All these games are on the ACC network, I believe, or at least four of them are.
Now, the Notre Dame game is for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there are four. Four out of the eight are on the ACC network. The Duke game is on ESPN. The other three games are on ESPNU or ESPN2.
Mm-hmm. Oof, what a rough start to the year. My goodness. What happened to McNeese State A&M Tech University for that first game?
I remember Bryant.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we looked them up because they have some connection to Tupperware.
And why not bring in our friends at Presbyterian? We would roll out the red carpet for them.
I would roll out red carpet for the blue hose.
That's right.
That would be definitely. I would go to that game.
You'd wear blue socks in honor of them. Even though we're rooting for Notre Dame, you'd wear the blue socks just because.
No, I wouldn't. Because remember, I thought blue hose meant something else.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes. It's not. Never mind. ACC tournament semifinals tonight. Virginia takes on Florida State at 7 o'clock. Then it's Carolina and Duke under Coach K. Duke has never, ever gone 0-3 versus Carolina in a season. North Carolina has won the first two meetings. Zion Williamson, the ACC Player of the Year last night. First game since February 20th. 13 out of 13 from the field. 29 points, 15 rebounds, 5 steals as Duke took down Syracuse. He was a factor, without a doubt, on the offensive end, but he was a pain in the neck defensively against Syracuse. So the Duke team that we were wondering what they would look like with Zion back, they look pretty doggone good. Blue Devils and Heels tonight in the second ACC tournament semifinal. Big Ten tournament quarterfinals today. The Michigan State Spartans took down Ohio State 77-70. January, February, Izzo, April. Win number 600 for Tom Izzo today as the Spartans advance to the Big Ten tournament semifinal, where they will take on the Wisconsin Badgers. Wisconsin just eliminated the 13 seed Nebraska 66-62. So one semifinal is set. We have two more games in the Big Ten tournament tonight. The 7 seed Minnesota taking on the 2 seed, the Purdue Boilermakers.
Holy schmoly.
You got that right, Cliz. And then you got number 6, Iowa, taking on number 3, Michigan. Also in quick hitters, Notre Dame hockey is not only playing tomorrow night for a spot in the Big Ten championship game, but they are playing for their NCAA tournament lives. Fighting Irish head coach Jeff Jackson on the importance of this game.
Well, I think we're to the point where we have to win to go on. I don't think we can assume anything less. I'm not talking about it. I mean, I'm talking about, hey, we're playing in a semifinal to have a chance to play in a championship game to have a chance in another Big Ten championship. So our focus point, our total focus has to be on one thing and one thing only, because we still control our own destiny, you know, and we worked hard to finish in second to be able to play at home this weekend. And, you know, last year I thought it helped us, you know, just being the crowd. You know, they were still overtime games. I mean, both the semifinal and the final. You know, so it's going to be like that. You have to accept that, and you just have to hope that you score that goal, you know, when it matters the most at the end of the game. So, you know, we just have to focus on Saturday night right now, and, you know, everything else will take care of itself.
Well, without a doubt, if you watch any television, you probably have seen the Notre Dame hockey ticket promo, and you've heard me scream, "We score!" when Cam Morrison beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game last year. So it's Notre Dame in Minnesota tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. If the Irish lose, the season is over. If they win, they're back in the Big Ten tournament championship game for a second consecutive year. Last night was a great night for Notre Dame hockey alums in the National Hockey League. First, we go to Long Island, Madison Square Garden Network. The Islanders and the Canadiens were 1-1 late in the third period.
And then a little crisscross, it's Barzell. 2-on-1 with Anders Lee. Barzell looking, waiting, got it through, they score! Barzell to Lee, and it's 2-1.
And that is goal number 25 for Anders Lee, the former Fighting Irish captain out of Edina, Minnesota. Islanders beat the Canadiens 2-1. Or as you like to say, the Le Habiton, the Macha. I said it for you.
Thank you.
Also last night in Arizona, the Coyotes were facing the Anaheim Ducks.
Stop that time, Miller. That was Vinny Hinostroza looking for the hat trick. He gets another look, and he scores! Toss him on the ice! The hat trick, Vinny Hinostroza!
Night, night, Anaheim.
And that is the first NHL hat trick for the former Irish forward, Vinny Hinostroza. 61 games, he has 15 goals, 19 helpers, and 34 points. Those are our quick hitters for tonight's program. When we come back, we turn the program over to you. Another installment of Ask Sports Beat. You ask Eric and I a question, we'll give you an answer, and you go into a drawing that will take place in just a little bit. At stake tonight, 4 sets of 2 tickets to go see Notre Dame take on Minnesota in the Big Ten Tournament semifinals at the Compton Family Ice Arena tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. So, during the break, think of a sports-related question. Get on the air, ask the question, you go into the drawing, and normally with the length of our segment, if you get on the air, good chance you're going to win since we're giving away 4 sets of 2 tickets to Notre Dame hockey taking on
the lovely and talented Minnesota Gophers.
That's exactly right. Minnesota coming to the Compton.
I'm sorry, I said it wrong. To Minnesota.
Minnesota. Very exciting when Minnesota plays Indiana in college basketball. All right, we will take a timeout. You take over the program next. If you would like to phone in right now, be first in line for our Ask Sports Beat segment. Call 574-282-2696. That's 574-282-2696. Ask Sports Beat with hockey tickets on the line next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Abby Weckler.
It is 23 minutes after the top of the hour. We welcome you back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on this Friday. South Bend Tribune's Eric Hansen. I'm Darren Pritchett. It is time for Ask Sports Beat. We turn the program over to you, the listener, and we ask you to phone in right now at 574-282-2696 with a question or comment. Preferably, we would like questions during Ask Sports Beat. And we will draw four names from all the people that phone in. And each of those four individuals pick up a pair of tickets to Notre Dame hockey versus Minnesota tomorrow night, 7 o'clock in a Big Ten tournament semifinal from the Compton Family Ice Arena. All right, let's get this segment going by welcoming Joe from South Bend to the program. Joe, how are you this evening? Oops. I hit the wrong button. Our board is set up different than I'm used to, and I hit the wrong button. So, Joe, call back. We'll get you back on the air. That was an error on the board operator. You know, after you do the same thing for 10 years the same way, and the board's now different, old habits
don't go away. I don't have to run the board, or we wouldn't even be on the air.
Well, I need to redo the board because it has totally thrown me off the last 2 days with the way it's set up right now. I mean, after 10 years hitting the same buttons, it's just hard to get my brain wrapped around all the changes. So we'll get Joe back on the line. And if you'd like to join us, I promise I will hit the right button for you. 574-282-2696 is the number to call. And let me hit the right button. Joe, how are you this evening? Joe, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry about hanging up on you. Hit the wrong button. Go right ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, two-part question about basketball team. I know a lot's been said about the youth on the team this year and whatnot as being kind of the reason for the regression, if you will. Wanted to get you guys' take if the answer is as simple as yes, young team, no real senior leadership. Or is there more to it? The second part is 10 plus wins in the ACC next year. Is it possible?
Okay, very good. Joe, again, thanks for phoning back in. We'll put you into that drawing for the Notre Dame hockey tickets. Well, Eric, we'll just take these one at a time. The first question Joe asked, is it all youth or is it something else? We have never denied youth is not a part of the equation for the lack of success this year. What I have pointed out, and I don't want to go through the whole spiel again because I've said it several times, I just feel like those of us in the media have made that the overwhelming reason why this team has failed, and I disagree with that. That's a part of it. But I think when you look at how good TJ Gibbs was as a secondary player last year, we all thought he would be perfect fit for the primary role, take the big shots, be the alpha on this basketball team, and it didn't happen. And when you had just John Mooney as the one consistent scorer on this team, it put a lot of pressure on that youth to do more than you expected at the start of the year. So I think it's kind of a trickle-down effect, and I'm just very careful about saying youth all the time because you are inadvertently blaming the season on the freshmen by saying, well, it's just because they were young, they didn't win. I think that's unfair. That's why I felt like a few weeks ago when we had this long conversation, it needed to be pointed out youth is a factor, but it is not the only reason why this team struggled throughout this season.
Right. And I do think part of the first part of his two-part question, the leadership, there was a lack of it. You had a captain quit, you had another captain get injured, and even though he was around, he wasn't on the court.
True.
And I think among the other players, you just didn't see a direction. You didn't see a great chemistry on court. I don't know what it was like in the locker room, but on court, you didn't see it. And then as far as can they win 10-plus games in the ACC next year, so much of that is going to be answered by what additions and subtractions come to this team in the offseason. The subtractions would be transfers. You don't have anybody expiring eligibility. And then figuring out which pieces work best together. You know, is Juwan Durham part of your starting lineup? Which of those shooters are you going to rely on? There's a lot of things to be answered in terms of how the pieces fit together, and I don't think we ever got a definitive lineup where you could say, you know what, had they all been healthy, this would have been the best lineup. And then if you're going to add a grad transfer, it's going to change that chemistry again.
And I think we were cautious with Hub and Harvey coming off an injury to put too much on their plates.
Right.
Hub came on strong, though, coming off that ACL. He was a guy on the rise late in the year. Harvey coming off a major injury, a lot of rehab, late start to the year. I think as a four-star player, we are expecting a little more, but I always tried to say he is coming off a major injury. Let's see what he does next year. Now, in terms of getting to 10 wins in the ACC, keep in mind there are repeat opponents, probably three teams in the NCAA tournament. They'll play twice next year. Florida State, Carolina, Syracuse. You also will play twice. Wake Forest, BC, and Georgia Tech. So a lot of chances to post wins there. You get Louisville, Miami, Pittsburgh, and Virginia Tech at home. And your road games, Clemson, Duke, NC State, Virginia. So those are four very difficult away games. I don't think we can just say they're going to win 10 games based on this year. They're going to have to show us how much they can improve during the offseason and getting going again with another ACC season. So I would say the goal is to go 10-10. And then if you do better than that, fantastic. But 10-10 in the ACC, so we'll give you a chance for the NCAA tournament.
Right. I think there are parts there that can give you a lot of potential. It's just fitting them together, getting the right chemistry, you know, where the more normal Mike Bray teams are, the sum is greater than the individual parts.
And let's see if there are grad transfers coming.
Yeah.
That could change the look of this basketball team and change the way we feel what next season could be. Joe, thanks for the question. We go to Tom from South Bend. He's up next on Ask Sports Beat here on WSBT Radio. Tom, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
We are good, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to say first, go Kansas State.
Okay. I'm glad you said that now.
As an alum, I have to do that. I played football, but they were like co-champs in the Big 12, which is pretty unheard of in recent years. So,
well, no question. And you got to be happy. Kansas is under investigation in basketball and football now. They don't cheat very well in football.
They were not our most favorite team when I was there. I can tell you that. You know,
no doubt.
The problem when I was there was, it was only the Big Eight. Our big game was with KU to see who would finish seventh and who would finish eighth in football, you know.
There you go.
Being seventh was a great thing.
No doubt.
So my question is, with these two coaches being fired from Southern Cal with this whole entrance exam thing with student athletes, what do you think would be a reasonable sanction for a situation like that?
Wow, that is a great, great question. And Tom, we thank you for the phone call. We'll put you into the drawing for those hockey tickets. Eric, that's a heck of a thought. I haven't really ventured down that road, what the possibilities could be with this whole scandal that is starting to unfold right now with, 50 people getting charged with crimes where basically it's elite people bribing individuals at elite schools, and these kids basically are being treated like athletes, and these coaches are getting bribes to get those kids into school. And that's the scandal involving a couple of actresses, including Aunt Becky on Full House. That would be Laura Loughlin.
Well, the thing is, I think Lynn Swann is in trouble as the athletic director. I think it's been that way for a while, and he hasn't been the athletic director that long, but there are a lot of ties to him in terms of, even if he didn't know what was going on, this is the NCAA's kind of terminology, there seems to be a lack of institutional control there in a lot of areas, and he just seems way over his head. But in terms of like the NCAA punishing them, this seems like it's kind of out of its purview largely. You have, or at least from a standpoint of whether it would affect the teams that I believe Tom would care about, which is the football team or the men's and women's basketball teams. The person let go in the administration was a senior associate athletic director. The coach let go was the head of the men's and women's water polo team. So I'm not sure that, you know, if the water polo teams are going on probation, that it would affect the Notre Dame community so much. I don't know that they have a big rivalry there. But
so you don't think the athletic department will get sort of sanctions over this?
I don't. I think this is more an FBI kind of thing, and it's more an academic misconduct than it is an athletic thing. It's about admissions and people faking that they were athletes rather than actual athletes doing wrong things. So I think it's a little bit more complicated, but I don't think you're going to see USC's football team, for example, go on probation. I do think that you need to keep an eye on Lynn Swann to see if he's going to be around as athletic director. And
because eventually his replacement will replace Clay Helton more than likely as USC football coach unless things turn around.
Correct. And Lynn, again, has just seemed to be a guy that's...
figurehead.
Yeah, figurehead more than any other athletic director I can think of. And in this day and age, you can't be that. Maybe in the 80s or the 70s you could be that. You could be, you know, a former coach and just kind of a figurehead. But I'll tell you what, there's very few guys like that anymore. And the ones that are, Barry Alvarez is an astute administrator, a really good businessman, really understands the whole, the totality of a program, of an athletic program. But, you know, you look at a lot of schools and they are former lawyers and they're former CEOs of businesses that are rising to the athletic director position. So that's a long answer to a kind of a complex question.
All right, Tom, thanks for the phone call. 574-282-2696 to participate in As Sports Beat. At stake, four sets of tickets to Notre Dame Minnesota Hockey Big Ten Tournament semifinal tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at the Compton Family Ice Arena. Tickets are available, und.com/buy tickets. Next up on As Sports Beat, we go to Mishawaka, and let's say hello to Nick. Nick, how are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, thank you.
Good. Hey, wanted to ask a Notre Dame football question.
Sure.
So my girlfriend and I were watching highlights the other day, and she realized, hey, Ewan is gone and Newsom is gone. So wanted to get your guys' take on what to expect or, I guess, worry about for the kicking game in 2019.
Very good, Nick. Thank you so much. Greatly appreciate the phone call. Let's go place by place here. We'll start with place kicker, Justin Yoon's replacement.
Well, you have a couple of options there. You have Jonathan Doerr, who's going to be a junior, who has done some kicking off. I think he kicked maybe one of the field goals. I think he came in the Navy game maybe and did some kicking, place kicking. He has been very inconsistent at everything that he's done. So he's going to have to turn the corner. He's going to be the guy. The other guy that would be competing is a preferred walk-on named Harrison Leonard, 5'11", 185-pound freshman that will arrive in June. And so we'll get to see what he's about in August. So there's big questions with both of those guys. Punter is Jay Bramblett, a freshman that was recruited. He's already on campus, and he'll be punting this spring. He's from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And I think there's high hopes for him. But, I mean, until you, especially with the place kicker, until you see them with the bright lights.
Between the hedges.
Yeah, it's a completely different. They can kick all they want in practice. I remember there, you know, I won't bring up the kid's name, but several years ago, Notre Dame had a scholarship kicker from Texas who was prolific.
Yeah.
And when the lights came on, he just couldn't do it. And they ended up replacing him with a guy that Charlie found in David Ruffer, who
Valpo,
he found.
Right?
They found him in the Interhall games. He was a kid that was kicking in Interhall games, and Charlie said, "Come on out for the team." He ended up being one of the better kickers Notre Dame's had in the past few decades. So yeah, there are big question marks at both areas. I would feel better about Jay Bramblett and the punting game, especially with him already on campus.
I'm thinking of a different kicker that was from Valparaiso.
Right,
Nick
right.
Joya.
Yeah, and
that's
who was a walk-on, but David
Ruffer.
Yeah, from Virginia.
Okay.
His dad owns some Five Guys Burgers and Fries franchises, if I remember.
David, you're a lucky guy.
Yeah.
If you got a special card, you can go anywhere in the country to Five Guys and get a free burger. That's a pretty Good deal. All right, very good. Nick, thanks for the phone call. Greatly appreciate it. We have a couple of open phone lines. If you'd like to participate and ask SportsBeat, 574-282-2696. Again, give it away. Fighting Irish hockey tickets against Minnesota tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Mike from Granger joins us on WSBT Radio. Mike, good evening.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
We are good. How are you?
I could not be better. It's good. Friday. It's beautiful.
All right.
Hey, I've got one that I imagine Eric is going to roll his eyes at.
Nah.
In a way too early poll, do you think Notre Dame will be in the top 10 in the preseason poll? Do you think that's deserved? And how many wins are you guys predicting for the Irish next fall?
All right, Mike, he did not roll his eyes. I can confirm that.
Yeah.
And let's start with, will they be a top 10 team when these polls start to come out for real?
Well, it's interesting because Phil Steele, who has a guide that he puts out every year, it's kind of the Bible for preseason annuals that's not team specific. He predicts what the AP top 10 is going to be each year, and he is incredibly consistent and accurate with that. And he came out with that today, and he had Notre Dame at number 8 in that top 10. So yes, and I've seen them in quite a bit of the top 10s of the way too early top 10s, or top 25s, the only mildly absurdly early top 25s. So I think that's probably going to be a given unless there's a significant personnel loss during the summer. As far as what I think their win total is, I think the national writers are way more optimistic about Notre Dame than the people that cover them every day.
Agreed.
And I think some of that is that we're not convinced that they won't be very good. It's just that there are so many questions, you really would be guessing to say, I think that this team is going to win more than 9 games. And that's where I have that win total. But I am also, there's times in the spring where you say, this is a 9-win team, and I don't see a great possibility of them changing that. With this team, I see great potential for that number to change up or down, but probably more likely up. But right now, the snapshot I'm looking at is a 9-win team.
See, I'm with you. I'm in that 9-win range, and there is a ceiling for this team, but I want to see the linebacker positions. Huge question marks. I mean, you lost 4 premier players on defense. You have to replace them. We just talked about all the youth on special teams. That can be a major factor in your kicking game. And what is the quarterback position going to evolve into in 2019 with question marks at the running back position? So I think there's a lot of questions right now. I think the national media sees a Notre Dame team that had great success last year. They believe in Brian Kelly. They believe in the developmental model that he has had. And I think right now they see the quarterback returning, so automatically that's a team they would put in the top 10 right now.
I think there's also, from the national media, a big boost in how they viewed Brian Kelly.
That's fair.
And I think they're kind of giving this team the benefit of the doubt. They like the coordinators. They like what Brian Kelly's done in his reboot. They're kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt without it playing out.
It might have something to do with the national writers buttering up Chip Long, wanting some of that barbecue in the Alabama franchises that he's going to be owning very soon. That's why they'll vote for Clemson. It's because of the smoking pig. There's no doubt about it. All right, very good. Mike, we appreciate the phone call here on WSBT Radio. We'll put you into the drawing for the hockey tickets.
Mike's probably scratching his head going, what
he's rolling his eyes at us now.
Yeah. He's like, I need to go take a dip in the cement pond.
That's exactly right. Let's go to Goshen. Martin joins us on WSBT Radio. Martin, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
We are good, thank you.
My question is, how solid do you think the running back group is going to be this year for Notre Dame?
Very good. Martin, we'll talk about that. Your thoughts on the running back position?
It reminds me a bit of 2015, although Tarion Folston was going to be part of that group, and he got injured in the first game. And then all of a sudden you had C.J. Procise and a bunch of freshmen. And I don't think that this is that much different than that year. You know, I need to, I would have a better answer after this week when I see some open practices, because I haven't seen Kyren Williams and the two redshirter freshmen do much.
Is Jafar Armstrong, CJ Procise in that memory?
I think he has the potential to be. Okay. Yeah, I do. I do think he has the potential to be that kind of player. I think part of it is just his toughness and his work ethic. You know, when Brian Kelly talks about he's the player that they actually have to say, okay, come off the field now, because he has such endurance and such, you know, I feel good about where that could go. But again, until you see it, you know, you have to be a little bit. And then what happens if he gets hurt? I don't think Tony Jones is a number one running back. I think he's an incredibly valuable player,
yeah,
but he's not your number one running back. And if you didn't have him, then is there a number one running back among those young guys? I like Kyren Williams a lot. What his skill set is so different. But there's times, especially in the November games, where you got to churn rushing yardage and keep the chains moving and keep the clock moving. And if Jafar Armstrong isn't on the field, I don't know that they have a guy that does that. So that's a fancy way of saying I don't know yet. But I really don't know yet. I will have a better answer for you, Martin, after this week.
Mm-hmm. The good news is, on paper, and what we know, should be a very physical Fighting Irish offensive line.
Exactly. And I also feel good about the possibility of a speed receiver on the outside, mm-hmm, opening up things in the running game. I think that was part of the issue last year with the running game, was that teams thought, well, you know what? They don't have anybody that's going to run past our corners, so we can really overplay the run. And the scheming is part of it too, Martin. So, again, another layer of we don't know yet, but this is what to look for.
And we are going to be involved in watching a lot of practices. So
two open practices this week.
So stay tuned. We'll have better answers for you on next week's program, which will be a little shorter because, yes, Thursday and Friday we're not on the air due to the NCAA tournament. But Monday through Friday we'll have an hour, you and I, to talk about it here on WSBT Radio. Martin, thanks for the phone call. We'll wrap up Ask Sports Beat by going to Steven. Steven, how are you this evening? Steven, go right ahead.
Where's Steven from?
Hey, guys. I just was wondering, I mean, you see a lot of teams as in Duke and North Carolina getting a lot of these big recruits. And, I mean, Notre Dame, they never really get the 1-2, I mean, even really top tens in basketball. I mean, what's it going to have to take for them to get one, if they could ever get one, or why are they not getting one?
All right, very good. Appreciate the phone call. Well, first off, I think we start the conversation by saying that when you think about, let's just talk about Duke specifically, they are now in the one-and-done market. They are very similar to Kentucky. If you are a high school kid and you are interested in playing 1 year and going to the NBA, you are not going to think about Notre Dame, and it has nothing to do with the basketball program. Why work your tail off in the classroom when really your college education right now doesn't matter to you because you're more focused on the NBA? So that makes it difficult right there for Notre Dame to even think about those guys. That's why Mike Bray likes to be old. That's how he competes. He likes the four-year guys, and that's the type of player he has been recruiting. But you think about Notre Dame's class that we just saw for the first time, the freshman, Goodwin was a four-star, Doherty a three-star, Leshefsky a four-star, Carmody a four-star, Hub a four-star. That's according to 24/7 Sports.
Juwan Durham was a top 50 player coming out of high school.
Correct, who arrived from Connecticut as a transfer. So it's not like, according to these rankings, Notre Dame is coming up empty-handed on the recruiting scene. I think you take a look at DJ Harvey. He was a four-star. Who can he become for this program? When you're a four-star, you should be an impact starter. TJ Gibbs, highly thought of. So Notre Dame is just not going to be able to compete against Kentucky, Duke, Carolina. They get a lot of those one-and-done guys. That's just not going to be possible. Eric, don't you agree with the way the education is here? Why, if you're a 6'9 forward and you're going to the NBA after 1 year, Would you even think about Notre Dame considering the educational standards? Because at this point, you're not interested in going to college if you're a one-and-done guy.
Right. Why would you want to work that hard when you're not going to get a Notre Dame degree ultimately? Mm-mm. I mean, you would have to come back for too long at the end of your career to get that Notre Dame degree. Notre Dame has dabbled in it a little bit. I mean, they have tried to go after a few of those kids. Think of Thon Maker a few years ago, the kid from Canada that ended up being a top 10 pick. But it's difficult. And again, the culture that Mike Bray has set, you know, I think there was a point where he felt like he was beating his head against a rock by losing those battles. They would get into the Final Five for a lot of these players, but they couldn't reel them in again based on, you know, a kid saying, why do I want to work that hard in the classroom to stay eligible for the short time I'm going to be there? So he kind of reinvented himself. He looked at the Missouri Valley Conference at that time model and said, you know, those teams tend to be older. Let's kind of change our culture to that. And it had been pretty successful up until this year. So I think it's a great question. And I think, again, they will pick their spots with people they think are fits, but I think they're always going to be kind of an underdog there.
Let me add this. Gibbs was the 88th best player in the country, according to 24/7 Sports, when he signed. And talking about this year's freshman, Goodwin was 100. Doherty, 316, but then you had Leshefsky, 65, Carmody, 86, and Hub, 87. So you got a handful of top 100 players in the class of 2018.
And Hub, prior to his injury, was a top 50 guy, and he may end up being a top 50 guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. We appreciate the phone call from everybody, including Steven, who wrapped up our segment. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll hold the drawing, and four people will win tickets to Notre Dame hockey tomorrow night at the Compton as they take on Minnesota. But first this from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. During the commercial break, we held the drawing for the Notre Dame hockey tickets versus Minnesota. Tomorrow night, Big Ten Tournament semifinals, 7 o'clock at the Compton. The names drawn were Nick, Joe, Tom, and Steven. Nick, Joe, Tom, and Steven, you've got two tickets to Notre Dame hockey. Our producer will be contacting you in just a couple of moments to let you know how to get those tickets. And for everybody else, tickets are still available. UND.com/buy tickets. Big Ten Tournament semifinal tomorrow night at 7. You can hear it on Z94.3 FM.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
A little different My Five today. I'm going to give Eric five MLB upcoming rules changes, and he's going to give a letter grade like he's a professor at Notre Dame. We'll start with this. Mound visits reduced from 6 to 5.
I'm going to go with a C minus there. I'm not in a huge hurry to get out of a baseball game. I enjoy the weather. And it just seems unnecessary to me.
Did any game feature anyone going to the mound 6 times? We had nothing close to that with the South Bend Cubs. And we, I think, had, was it 8 or 10 last year? I can't remember what it was, but we didn't even come close to the number. All right, the next rule change coming to Major League Baseball. Home Run Derby features a $1 million prize for the winner.
I gave it an A-. Why not? Give them something, some incentive. The only thing better would be give me $1 million.
I like that. Grading rules changes coming to Major League Baseball. Now, this change comes in 2020. The September 1st roster goes from what we have known. You could have up to 40 players on your roster. That is being cut down to 28.
I probably like a little bit, maybe another player or two than that, but I do like the concept. I gave it a B because it changes the games in September. You're playing a game, let's say, against the Pirates that are out of it, and you're trying to get in the playoffs, and they've got 15 people in the bullpen and 18 pinch hitters, and they would normally not have those, and they might have worn their bullpen out the day before. I kind of like that rule.
The next rule's change for you to grade. Number two, just one trade deadline on July 31st. No longer will there be a waiver trade period in August.
You know, that's one of those that I probably will feel differently after it is employed than what I'm thinking in my mind. I gave it a C+ because I like the weaselly waiver trades. I like the fact that you could add somebody in August.
I like making July 31st exciting.
I think July 31st had been exciting. It hasn't maybe in recent years, but
they need to do something with free agency because the NFL's been exciting all week with all the moves. It takes 4 months for Major League Baseball to sign their players. All right. And now number one Major League Baseball rule change. This is 2020. And I'm going to talk more about this next week because I have some research and data that I want to bring forth. But I'll let you go. Grade pitcher with a 3-batter minimum in one inning.
Well, we're probably going to disagree. I said F. I don't like putting that kind of restraint. Now, again, maybe your data will bear something out differently, but I just don't like it. I'm a get off my lawn kind of guy with that rule.
All right, fair enough. That is the My 5 question of the day. More Sports Beat next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom Noy has a column on Ian Book. I have my weekly not-so-live chat / mailbag. We have Michigan State hoops and Purdue hoops in the Big Ten tournament and much, much more.
Tom Izzo, victory number 600 today as the Spartans took down the Ohio State University, but the Buckeyes should go dancing. Have a good weekend.
You too.
I'll talk to you on Monday. Sean joins me next. It is the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.
Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Luke Leitner and Smallbone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the wall, middle. Score! The Irish are going to the championship game!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend, finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske, win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tye.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say because I understand none of them, though.
York now. In front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion!
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
It's a Friday here at WSBT Radio, 7 minutes after the top of the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Budweiser, Bethel College and Bethel College Athletics, and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Coming up, we'll talk about some college football win totals. Golden Tate having some fun on social media after signing with the New York Giants. We've got rapid fire. We will preview the Notre Dame Hockey Big Ten Tournament semifinal against Minnesota. And we'll let you know what's happening on WSBT Radio over the next 72 hours. We have a lot of things taking place basketball-wise. I'm going to start going off the board for a second.
Ooh, all right. I like it when you go off the board.
Duke and Syracuse played in an ACC tournament quarterfinal last night. It was the return of Zion Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
After missing 6 games, after blowing out his shoe and MCL was a little dinged up.
He wore a Nikes last night, by the way.
He did. He did.
At least that's what they look like.
13 out of 13 from the field.
Man.
Had a double-double with 5 steals.
A couple of big blocks.
And a couple of major dunks.
Man.
So he looked okay. But in the first half, there was a little incident. We remember Grayson Allen, who was known for being over the top in his play, tripping people, the former Duke player.
Right.
So we have that history of Duke. Well, the shoe was on the other foot last night as Williamson was maybe or maybe not tripped by Syracuse Frank Howard in the first half. Have you seen the video?
I have.
And Frank Howard tried to trip him. His foot was stuck out. His toe was in the air. He tried to trip him. There's no doubt in my mind.
He looked like Krusty the Clown trying to trip Sideshow Bob. I mean, his foot, his big old foot is sticking up to the sky. I mean, come on. It was like he had clown shoes on. He might as well.
So we're...
I don't think there's much doubt about it to me.
We're in agreement.
Just looking at it. Yeah.
Jim Boeheim says everybody's crazy. He looked at the video and he didn't see a trip.
Yeah.
Howard said he hadn't spent all this time coming this far to start tripping people. But I think there was intent. Now, Williamson didn't fall. Had he fallen, I think it would have been a bigger deal, but he just stumbled. So, Jay Williams, former Duke player, great Duke player, part of the ESPN studio team that was at the ACC tournament. Here's what he had to say about the alleged tripping incident. Are you ready?
Okay.
This is courtesy of ESPN.
There is no place in the game for stuff like this. I said the same thing when the Grayson Allen stuff happened a couple years ago. The same thing just happened there with Frank Howard. We have the replay. You see that straight up. There is no place in the game for that. No place in the game for that. It's uncalled for.
So you heard him say there's no place in the game for that.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of years ago, he was hard on Grayson Allen at the time. But then later on in 2017, he softened his stance on Grayson Allen because TMZ Sports talked to him. And here was that conversation from 2017. This is the same guy that just made those bold comments.
Okay.
I kind of like, you know what? I'm over it. I like the fact that he trips people. Why not? Be a villain. Enjoy it. Like, I'm not saying it gets right, but I will say sometimes there's a tendency to overreact because as a Duke player, you're always hated against. People are always telling you that you're soft. You're a choir boy. So sometimes you want to prove to people, like, no, like, I'm from not a great area. Like, I can play basketball just like anybody else.
So be like Christian Laettner and go stomp on Timberlake, too. I mean, what? Come on.
Remember what he said. Everybody just overreacts.
Yeah.
And then last night...
There is no place in the game for stuff like this. I said the same thing when the Grayson Allen stuff happened a couple years ago. The same thing just happened there with Frank Howard. We have the replay. You see that straight up. There is no place in the game for that.
Huh.
I get the contradiction.
I just thought that was interesting.
Are we keeping score? I think we should be.
Bucket. Back in 2017, he didn't like what Grayson was doing, and he did come out against a Duke player, but then he came back later and said, you know what, I've changed my tune. I overreacted. Well, then he's back on the anti-tripping thing again.
I mean, to me, if there's a textbook way that you're going to trip somebody, it's what Howard did last night. Again, he just kind of casually sticks his foot out, and again, his foot is sticking up. It's not on the floor. He's got it off the floor. I mean, how obvious does it need to be? I can't see any defense of this, but I also love this contradiction that Jay Williams has got going there. When it's a Duke player, it's fine, apparently.
I just thought it was childish when Grayson Allen did it, and I'll put Frank Howard in that same conversation. Childish.
And Grayson Allen is kind of in his own category almost with just kind of the dumb stuff that he did. He obviously let his emotions get the best of him and wasn't able to reel it in when he was on the floor.
Does he exist in the NBA?
That's a good question. Let me see if I can...
I don't follow the NBA, but I...
Make a Google machine work.
In the amount of time I hear NBA talk, I have never heard his name mentioned in the least bit. All right, 13 minutes after the top of the hour. Rapid fire coming up here in just a couple of moments. We started this on Wednesday. Let's wrap it up tonight. College football win totals from Bet Online. The four teams we're going to focus on today: Notre Dame, Ohio State with a new head coach, Oklahoma, they've been to the playoff the last couple of years, and USC, a Notre Dame rival. So let's start with Ohio State. The Buckeyes win total has been set at 10. Key games, they'll take on our pal Mike Denbrock, the offensive coordinator at Cincinnati. That's a home game at the Horseshoe. They will also host Michigan State, Wisconsin and Penn State. Ohio State will travel to Nebraska. I put them on the list thinking they might be better, but I don't want to say they're a powerhouse team. And the Buckeyes will go north to Michigan. So Urban Meyer no longer there. Haskins, their quarterback, off to the NFL. Ohio State at 10. This is one of the more difficult numbers, in my opinion, because you just don't know. New head coach, new quarterback. Right.
And that's, I mean, when you look at the last four seasons, they have been over 10 in each of the last four. But now you're throwing Ryan Day, the new head coach, into the mix. How's that going to work? I think for at least this year, they'll be fine. Kind of like, I mean, Lincoln Riley, there were some questions about him when Bob Stoops retired. And look at what he's done. And the cupboard is obviously still stocked. It's not like everybody left when Urban Meyer retired. So there's enough there.
You got the keys to the Mercedes.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm going to go over for Ohio State, over 10.
I think 10's actually a good number. It's hard to go over with a lot of questions, but knowing the way Urban recruited, he's going to have some great players to work with. Justin Fields transfers from Georgia, eligible to play right away.
Right.
Could be the starting quarterback. So reluctantly, I'm going to go over, but I really like the number 10.
Okay.
Next up, Oklahoma. Do they have a third Heisman Trophy winner coming to the forefront? Nah, not sure about that. But Oklahoma's win total has been set at 10.5. They have the annual Red River game on a neutral field against Texas. Also home games against West Virginia, Iowa State, and TCU, and at Oklahoma State. Not a lot of big names there.
And that's the thing in the Big 12. It's like, who's going to be the legitimate contender? Even if they lose to Texas, that still puts them at 11, and that's a big part of why they've been in the championship mix for the last few years. So I've really got no choice but to go over. If West Virginia was going to be a true contender, they should have been one this past season, but they weren't. Iowa State, solid defense, and all those others just have too many question marks, so I'll go over.
I like Texas a lot. That could be a loss.
Yeah.
But where's the other loss coming from?
Right.
So I'm going to go over with Oklahoma at 10.5, thinking they're an 11-win football team. And that's with a new quarterback. That's a scary. I think that's one of those. If I was a betting man, I would stay away from Oklahoma in 10.5. That's a dangerous, dangerous selection. Next up, the University of Southern California Trojans. Their number is 8.5. They have home games against Stanford, Utah, who always wins 8, 9, 10 games. They also host Oregon and UCLA. They've got road games at BYU, Washington, Notre Dame, and Arizona State. A lot of landmines on that schedule.
Rumor has it William H. Macy is taking over for Clay Helton after his wife, Felicity Huffman, in this whole thing.
I also learned on Twitter today that Lori Loughlin and Becky from Full House involved in that allegation. She has been hired to get IU into the NCAA basketball tournament.
There you go. I saw that
You can learn a lot on Twitter, can't you?
That was good stuff. You really can. You really can. What's interesting, when I look at USC's track record, they obviously didn't have a good year at all last year. They've only been over 8.5 twice in the last 4 years, and I think they're on a downward trend right now. We're going to see this thing bottom out before it gets much better.
Great.
So I think they're going to be way under 8.5.
I think they're a 6-6 football team.
At best, yeah.
I'm going to take the under on USC. Last, but definitely not least, the University of Notre Dame. Bet Online has the win total at 9.5. Let's refresh your memory. Key road games, Georgia, Michigan, Stanford. Home games, I'm going to put Virginia on there. Sneaky good. USC and Virginia Tech.
To me, and I heard some of you and Eric's concerns in the first hour, and I mean, we all know what the concerns are.
Sure.
They're mostly on the defensive side of the ball, and they're question marks. But I'm confident enough in especially the defensive staff, not that I don't have confidence in the offensive, but that's, again, where the biggest questions are, in that staff's ability to develop these guys and get them ready to go. And then you mix in, you're right about Virginia, but I think it boils down to you've got to win 2 out of 3 with Georgia, Michigan, and Stanford. So if you can win 2 of those 3 games, then I think you can be at 10, and I think they will be. So I'm going to go over.
Right now I have them at 9, so I'm taking the under on 9.5.
Okay.
We're in the same ballpark. We have the right to change our opinions.
That's especially after the spring.
We get to see two practices next week, isn't going to... We're not going to be Einstein and totally just change all of our thoughts.
But, no.
But I think it's just going to be fun to see the running back position. That's something I'm really intrigued to see.
Yep. By the way, Grayson Allen, Utah Jazz, he's played in about half of their games this season. So he's a two-way guy.
So he's spending some time in the G League.
Yep.
Okay, there you go. Not much of a factor. All right, that's going to do it for our college football win total. Final thing I want to accomplish in this segment. If you're a Notre Dame fan, you love Golden Tate. He was fun to be around here at Notre Dame. He jumped into the Michigan State band after scoring a touchdown at Notre Dame Stadium. He's got a Super Bowl ring with Seattle. Spent some good years in Detroit, got traded to Philadelphia. Free agent signed by the New York Football Giants yesterday. And Golden uses social media very well. He tried to get the attention of the Steelers before he signed with the Giants. And he pointed out how good he was at breaking tackles last year in a graphic that came up on Pro Football Focus. So Golden knows how to use social media.
Yeah.
Well, he's at it again. If you're a sports fan and you're as old as Sean and I, then you were probably a big fan of the movie Jerry Maguire. Tom Cruise played the role of Jerry Maguire, the sports agent. Then you had Rod Tidwell, that was the star wide receiver of the Arizona Cardinals. More bite than sometimes productivity.
Right.
Cuba Gooding Jr. played the role of Rod Tidwell.
Right.
And there's a famous scene where Rod is a lame duck, free agent, playing for Arizona. He wants the cash, the quan, as he would call it.
That's right.
And there's a scene where Rod and Jerry are on the phone, and Rod is in total control of the conversation with his agent.
And Jerry Maguire sitting in his office.
Yes. With all these other phones ringing, because at that point he was leaving his agency, he got fired, and he was going on his own. Mm-hmm. So all of his clients are calling, but he's stuck on the line with Rod Tidwell.
Rod Tidwell.
So Golden Tate, since he was a free agent, decided to reenact the famous Jerry Maguire scene, and Golden is talented enough, he plays the role of Jerry Maguire and Rod Tidwell. And folks, you got to go on Twitter to find it. He acts it perfectly. Now, we're only going to play the audio. He's got the dance. He's got the Tidwell maroon Arizona State looking sweatpants on. He's got no shirt on. He's dancing like Rod Tidwell did.
Same shaved bald head. I mean, he really looks a lot like Rod Tidwell in that video.
He does. And he's got the dress shirt and tie on like Jerry Maguire. So this is the audio version of Golden Tate bringing us his installment of Jerry Maguire.
You ready, Jerry? Show me the money.
Show me the money! That it feel so good, Jerry! That it feel so good! Say it with me one time! Say it with me one time!
Show you the money.
Say it with me, Jerry! Say it with me, brother!
Show you the money.
No, 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 no! Let's show you the money! Show me the money. Let me hear you say it.
Show me the money.
Louder, Jerry.
Show me the money.
Look, Jerry, say it louder. Show me the money. There you go, Jerry. Show me the money. Say you love this black man. I love this black man. Say you love black people. I love black people. Show me the money.
Congratulations, Jerry. You're still my agent.
He's the best. Golden Tate, his version of Jerry Maguire. If you go on Twitter, it's all over the place. I've got it linked on my Twitter account.
That movie's 23 years old, by the way. I cannot believe that. 23 years old, mm-hmm. Jerry Maguire. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding?
There was a great run for about 10 years. Great sports movies. Hoosiers, Rudy, Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
Remember the Titans, probably close to that time frame. You think about the last 10, 15 years, have there been many great sports movies? Now, one I personally like, and I think it's probably over 10 years old now, I really enjoyed Moneyball.
Oh, yeah, me too.
The Brad Pitt, Oakland A's analytical movie.
Right.
Even though it left out a major storyline that the A's starting pitching was really, really good with Hudson and Mulder and Zito. But I loved Moneyball. I thought it told a great story. But recently, have there been a lot of great sports movies?
No, I mean,
really
you have to go
out?
Back even farther. Like, You said 10, 15 years, like Friday Night Lights. I really like that about high school football and the whole the book for Odessa, Texas and all that stuff. But that's again, that's like 15 plus years by now. So there really haven't that off the top of my head since then.
This is going to scare a lot of people. But you know what movie turns 40 years old next year?
Oh, man.
Caddyshack. 40 years. 40. How about a Fresca? We will have rapid fire coming up next. The Sports Beat continues.
Easy to grin.
That's right. Yeah, the stock market beat. But a man worthwhile
is the man who can smile
when his shorts aren't too tight in the seat. Okay, Pookie. We're back with more in just a moment.
Rapid fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Steyers and Darren Pritchett.
All right, Darren, as you know, it was announced today Notre Dame basketball is going to open their 2019-2020 season at North Carolina on November 6th. So my question to you is this. If you had to choose, would you rather play the Tar Heels to open the season, as is going to happen for the first time, or say mid-January? Would you rather, which one would you rather be your first game against a team like North Carolina?
Mid-January.
Really?
Allow this team to grow? Absolutely. If you're going to have some additions, grad transfer route, that's a possibility. All these freshmen become sophomores. They're almost halfway through their careers once you get to January next year. So absolutely. I'm not a fan of opening with a conference game anyway, let alone playing North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Who knows? They might be raising a Final Four banner, maybe a national championship banner that night, depending on what happens over the next few weeks. So I'm just going to buy myself as much time as possible with this group coming off a 19-loss season to get themselves in the best position to take on one of those blue blood programs.
See, for these two, like this specific matchup for next year specifically, if I were Notre Dame, I would rather take my chances right out of the gate because they've got everybody coming back, whereas North Carolina, they're going to lose four of their top five scorers from this year, assuming Nasir Little, the freshman, comes out, which he's projected to be mid-first-round guy, so I would assume they're going to lose him. So that's four of their top five. You know they're going to have talent coming in their recruiting class next year, but again, that's going to be the first game for a true freshman. So I would rather take my chances with an experienced bunch like Notre Dame has right out of the chute against a team that's going to lose a lot of considerable talent from a really good team this year. So that's
fair
how
argument.
I would.
Fair argument.
So, all right. Speaking of North Carolina, they play Duke tonight. Are they playing, are these two teams playing for a number one seed when they meet in the ACC semifinals?
I would have to think so because Virginia and Gonzaga appear to be the two teams that have locked up a number one seed. Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina, to me, are jockeying for position. I'm not necessarily on the Michigan State could sneak bandwagon. I mean, they lost two games to Indiana. And they lost to Illinois. So you've got some, I don't want to call Indiana bad losses. The Illinois loss is bad. Yeah. Indiana is not great. I just take a look at Carolina. They've beaten Duke twice. They beat them without Zion Williamson.
Right.
If Duke wins tonight convincingly, you could see Duke jumping this North Carolina team. I mean, Duke hammered Kentucky in the first game of the year.
Right. And they're in the conversation right now.
LSU lost today, the number one seed in the SEC tournament.
But does that game really count since it was at the start of the season?
I would hope so.
You know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. So, yeah, I think it could decide a number one seed. If Carolina wins, they lock up a number one seed. If Duke wins, then they're in position because they have two victories over Virginia already in their back pocket with maybe a third chance in the final tomorrow night.
Yeah, and I mean, I think at the very least, Duke is playing. North Carolina might be on a little more solid ground since they've won. I think it's 19 of their last 21 going into this game tonight. Obviously, for Duke, the argument would be if they win this against Carolina, even though they've lost the first two, as you said, they lost the first two without Zion Williamson. So they can make the case that they're a different team with him, and as long as he's healthy, then that maybe kind of bumps them up a little bit. And even if Duke would win this game and then lose a close game maybe to Virginia in the championship game tomorrow, I would think that they are still on pretty solid ground. I mean, they're right there on the cusp, and three of their five losses are without Zion Williamson. So I think that's got to play in their favor if they're able to beat the Tar Heels tonight. Okay, Fox Network, not FS1, you know, the cable side, but actual Fox. There you go. Boom. They're going to unveil a college football pregame show next fall to try to challenge ESPN's College Game Day. Urban Meyer, Brady Quinn, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, and Rob Stone. Rob Stone will be the host. So that's going to be your lineup. Urban Meyer, Brady Quinn, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart. Do you buy or sell that group being a serious rival to Herb Street, Corso, Howard, and Reese Davis?
No. I think you're going to have some opinionated guys. Brady Quinn is very opinionated. Does that mean he's not doing analyst work?
Which I'm disappointed. I am not sure, but like, because Herb Street still does game day and then flies off, so I don't know how that's going to work for Brady Quinn.
Herb Leinart doesn't do much for me. Reggie Bush has been good on the NFL Network. Stone's okay. When you're the host, you're kind of the backseat guy.
Right.
You're setting up all these
guys. Everybody up.
I mean, Urban's okay. I'm not sure if he's going to be boisterous. Is he going to criticize individuals? So I think it's an interesting tandem, but you're going up against a franchise that has been going since the early 1990s. That Notre Dame-Florida State game was the first time they took it off campus in 93. You're just not going to be able to compete. That's basically like starting a brand new TV station and starting a news and going up against stations that have been around forever. People just don't change right away. It takes time. So if Fox is going to compete with ESPN, it's going to be years down the line. Just because when you want to watch college football pregame, what do? Besides turning on Game Day Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, go to Game Day on ESPN.
Yeah. And I mean, they're all solid football guys, but my big question is, where's the personality in this group? Because I mean, Urban Meyer tried TV after he left Florida the first time before he went to Ohio State, and he was just kind of
There's no Rex Ryan voice.
Yeah, there's no one. And it's not that you need guys to go out on a limb, but it just seems like they're going with bigger names over personalities, which is essentially what ESPN did when they got Jason Witten for Monday Night Football, and also what they did when they put Michelle Beadle and Mike Greenberg together when they did the Get Up show. I mean, there was no chemistry. There's no real personality in that whole thing. And so I'm like, I could see Urban Meyer and Brady Quinn, then plus, you know, Booger McFarland is working for ESPN, obviously, and I don't know how all these contracts work out and everything, but it just seems like they need a bigger personality along with these guys, not just a bunch of names and throw them into a studio and think you're going to go up against College Game Day. So it just doesn't seem like a good recipe early on.
When it's noon, people go to ESPN to see Corso with the headgear, too. Well, that's must-see TV for a lot of people.
And think about it. Corso and Vitale, no matter what you might think about them right now, but they were not name guys. They were not big name recognition guys when ESPN hired them. It was their personality that drove them to what they are. So, I mean, you know, again, I can see, I mean, hiring Urban Meyer is easy because he's the biggest name. He's on the market now, so you've got to throw some money at him and stick him in there. But I just think you need a different pairing. And I think it's going to be really interesting, like what you said with Brady Quinn, because I felt like when he started doing more game analyst stuff rather than studio, he was getting a lot better the last couple of years. I think he's really good at that. So I don't know, you know, what that makes. They tried this a few years back with him and Leinart, and I didn't think that show was, you know, necessarily jumped off the page at you or anything.
Who's going to make the guest cry like Tom Rinaldi? You got to have that crying.
Who's going to be the storyteller?
Anyway.
So, yeah. I mean, who knows how this thing evolves down the line. Fox is at least trying. You've got to make some kind of run, I guess, at the big boys if you're going to try to do something. But I just, short term, I don't see it.
Fox has tried to compete with ESPN in a lot of areas, and they have not fared very well.
No. But again, this is going to be on their network now, you know, as opposed to their sports network. So, well, I mean, just as far as viewership. But still, I mean, I agree. And like the fact that it's going to be in a studio as opposed to on location is going to be a big difference too. So, all right, last question for tonight. Which rule would you most like to see changed? Adding a shot clock for high school basketball or men's college basketball going from halves to quarters?
Okay, I'm going to handle this question a little differently.
Okay.
As someone that covers Notre Dame, and we want to see Notre Dame win, I would say don't go to quarters because normally they're very, very good at the free throw line. So going to quarters, you lose free throws because you reset the foul total at the start of a quarter.
See, I still don't know why college thinks that one has to do with the other because like in high school, they don't reset. You know, it's like, why can't you just keep the fouls?
I agree. If they would do that, I'd be fine with quarters.
That makes sense what you're saying there.
And it would be a natural timeout for TV and radio.
Yeah.
So I don't mind that. I don't like a shot clock in high school. I mean, my goodness, it's difficult budget-wise at these schools to have these athletic programs, let alone adding another individual
you have to pay to run the shot clock.
So I am totally against the shot clock in high school. So I guess the obvious choice would be go to quarters in men's basketball. But again, I would like to see the fouls not reset at the end of the quarter.
That would be the caveat that I would say as well, even though the women still reset it. But Tom Noyev and I have had this conversation about the quarters every now and then when he fills in, and it's. And I know he is completely anti-quarter, but I just don't see what the big deal is because every other level plays with quarters with the exception of college basketball. And I know he says, well, it makes it unique and everything. And I just...
I don't need new unique. I just think you find a way now to have a natural timeout.
Exactly.
For TV and radio, and it's not as disruptive for the fans.
Right. You've got the natural break there in the middle. And to me, when you do it that way, it just sort of makes the pace of the game at least seem like it's quicker anyway. So I prefer the quarters. I think the shot clock, there are times doing high school basketball where you're going, man, I wish they had a shot clock out there. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing against it is, one, ensuring the operation consistently of the shot clock. And then you've also, just what you said, from a budgetary standpoint, every high school then for boys, girls, JV, freshmen, on down the line, you got to start having a shot clock operator there in addition to your regular scoreboard operator.
I wish there's a way for Penn to play at Elkhart and Lafayette to play at Lafayette.
Oh, man.
But I understand opponents, geography, I get it, but
I don't get it.
We worry about fairness at semi-state, but not in sectionals.
Right. Play it in the home gym. And potentially regional, for that matter, could be in your home
gym.
I'd
really love to know the difference in what Penn would bring to Elkhart compared to Lafayette, if it would be significant. The thing is, from what I'm told by people that cover high school basketball games, Culver Academy brings no fans.
Right.
So where you put them does not matter.
Right.
It's just a different non-hometown community thing with them because they're an academy.
Mm-hmm. Their families, theoretically, can be all over the country, just like you're in college or something.
But I do get Lafayette is taking on a Fort Wayne team, so you meet in the middle in Elkhart. But it's just a shame that Penn can't play in Elkhart. Because for Carmel, I mean, there's not a whole lot of difference.
No, I mean, that's exactly right. Those schools down there are going to have to travel anyway. And really, putting the other two 4A teams over in Lafayette would have been a shorter trip for both of them than coming all the way up to Elkhart.
Wouldn't it make more sense to have one in Elkhart and one in Indianapolis for the North? That way you don't have to maybe deal with this cross-country trips that we're making?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just a thought. Lafayette's a great place to call a game. Have you been there?
I have not.
I actually called Penn Marion there, and it was when...
Marion with an O?
Yes. When... oh, goodness, what was his name? Went to Michigan State, NBA, Memphis, Zach Randolph.
Okay.
He played for Marion, and he skipped through the layup line. He would stop and talk to the officials while the rest of the team was warming up.
This was in high school he did this?
He was talking to the cheerleaders. I think I might have done the game with Bob Berger, and we were just watching Zach. He was doing anything but going through the layup line and doing the drills.
Just doing his own thing,
He just kind of did his own thing. So that might have been the last time Penn was at semi-state then?
2001 was their... No, hold it. Yeah, 2000... Hold it. I've got two different things in my head. 2001 was their last semi-state championship. Okay. Yeah, 2006 was... Yeah, 2006 was their last regional title, the last time they went to semi-state. Yeah.
Because I'm looking here, Zach Randolph played at Michigan State 2000 and 2001. So that would have been 1999.
So the year Penn went to state and was state runner-up? Does that sound right?
No, because they lost to Marion.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Maybe I'm wrong, but I do remember Zach Randolph skipping through the layup line over at Lafayette Jeff. All right, we'll take a timeout. Notre Dame hockey preview next on WSBT.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick, and you're listening to South Bend's number one sports talk show, Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Tips it right point for Kotarenko. Sliger got his stick on the puck. It comes free, and here comes Cal Burke, 2-on-1. Burke with speed, over the line, left side, Sliger, he shoots, he scores! The South Bend native! Sliger scores shorthanded! His dad, Andy, calm and cool on the bench. 2-0 Notre Dame in the second.
That was from the call last Saturday night as Notre Dame completed a two-game series sweep of Michigan State in a Big Ten tournament quarterfinal. The Irish won 1-0 and 2-0 last weekend. Goaltender Cale Morris, the number one star in Division I college hockey, as he stopped all 55 shots against Michigan State. So the second-seeded Fighting Irish will take on the three-seed, the Minnesota Gophers, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Compton Family Ice Arena. This is one game. And you move on to the Big Ten Tournament Championship game. And if Notre Dame wins, they will either, a week from Saturday, host Penn State for the Big Ten Championship, or a week from Sunday, play at regular season champion Ohio State. Penn State and Ohio State play their semifinal on Sunday. Apparently, Value City Arena is hosting events the next two Saturdays. Probably high school wrestling. We've been moved before.
Okay.
So we might play Saturday. We might play Sunday if Notre Dame is able to beat Minnesota. Fighting Irish head coach Jeff Jackson met the media yesterday, and he feels the way I do. If Notre Dame loses to Minnesota or loses to whomever in the Big Ten Tournament Championship game, likely their season will end. Notre Dame, number 15 in the pairwise, and you really want to be 12 to be comfortable because automatic bursts start coming in, and all of a sudden, when you're 13, 14, 15, 16 in the pairwise, you get kicked out. Here's Coach Jackson discussing that storyline.
Well, I think we're to the point where we have to win to go on. I don't think we can assume anything less. I'm not talking about it. I mean, I'm talking about, hey, we're playing in the semifinal to have a chance to play in a championship game to have a chance in another Big Ten championship. So our focus point, our total focus has to be on one thing and one thing only, because we still control our own destiny, you know, and we worked hard to finish in second to be able to play at home this weekend. And you know, last year I thought it helped us, you know, just being the crowd, you know, they were still overtime games. I mean, both the semifinal and the final, you know, so it's going to be like that. You have to accept that, and you just have to hope that you score that goal, you know, when it matters the most at the end of the game. So you know, we just have to focus on Saturday night right now, and you know, everything else will take care of itself.
And this senior class, Dylan Malmquist, Bobby Nardella, Jack Jenkins, Joe Wegwer, trying to become the first Notre Dame class to make the NCAA tournament in all 4 years. And they're two wins away from achieving that goal. They will take on a Minnesota team that the Irish went 1-3 against during the regular season, including Minnesota sweeping Notre Dame at the Compton Family Ice Arena 5-1 and 2-1. The 2-1 game, they scored with under 10 seconds left. Notre Dame was changing their defensemen. They got a breakaway, and they scored the game winner with under 10 seconds to go. So the Irish are just 1-3 against Minnesota this year. I asked Coach Jackson, what's the difference right now between these two teams, considering Minnesota took 3 out of 4 from the Fighting Irish?
Well, I think we're to the point where we have to win to go on.
Sorry about that. Got the wrong button there. Let me try that one more time. Here we go.
Ability to finish was certainly a factor. I mean, Minnesota's playing a much more strict defensive style now than they have in the past. And, you know, trying to get pucks through, they block a lot of shots. And getting through the neutral zone. I mean, they play that 1-4 type of system in the neutral zone. So, and that's always given us problems. I mean, we work on it, trying to break it, you know, as much as possible. But, you know, whether it was St. Cloud or Minnesota Duluth or Minnesota now, I mean, they all play that same neutral zone system. And it's challenging to get through with possession. So you either have to accept the fact that you're going to, you know, chip pucks in and get the forecheck going, or you have to try to break it down. We haven't had a tremendous amount of success in the latter, so we have to just make sure that we do a good job of not turning pucks over, because that plays into their strength, which is their transition game.
I am not a hockey coach, so bear with me, but he okay. mentioned the 1-4. I do a lot of listening when I'm around our coaching staff. Basically, Minnesota will set up when Notre Dame's bringing the puck down the ice. One guy in the Notre Dame zone pressuring the puck. Then you got four guys back trying to clog up center ice. Mm-hmm. And they basically want to avoid you gaining speed through center ice and carrying the puck over the blue line. They want you to dump it in, and then their guys go and get it, and they come the other way. So it takes precision passing, cross ice passing to break that 1-4. A lot of NHL teams do it. And we lost to St. Cloud State back-to-back years in the NCAA tournament, one time as a number one seed. And the head coach of St. Cloud is now the head coach of Minnesota, Bob Motzko. So that's why that system comes back into play. And we did not have a lot of offensive success against Minnesota this year. So that's something to keep in mind. Special teams can alter that by scoring on the power play. And faceoffs, Notre Dame's at 53% this year, Minnesota only 48%. That can be huge anytime in a hockey game. You have an offensive zone draw, you win it, that can lead to a scoring chance right away. So the Irish have a slight advantage in that particular category.
Well, Motzko, he was not the head coach last year.
Correct. Don Lucia.
Yeah, so I remember there was a different guy. So that's kind of why they've obviously got a little bit different system this year.
That's exactly right. And St. Cloud, one of the top two or three teams in the country right now. They have that older team. Now, Minnesota will give him the ability to recruit more high-end younger players, but St. Cloud always good at bringing in those older players, which is sometimes very difficult. That's the great thing about the Big Ten. Everybody's the same age.
Yeah.
We don't have any of this 24, 25-year-olds playing like we face with Lowell and some of those teams.
Big
hockey.
Difference.
Oh, yeah, physically.
Yeah.
I mean, everything in terms of experience, it makes a huge, huge difference. Final soundbite, Bobby Nardella, leading scorer, one of the top defensemen, missed last weekend due to injury. I asked Coach Jackson yesterday. He says he's good to go for this weekend. But with Bobby gone last weekend, our captain, Andrew Peak, who is a part of the number one defensive pair, had a new partner with Nardella out. It was a freshman by the name of Spencer Stasny, who is a Nashville Predator fourth-round draft pick. This is a freshman who has been a part of the third pair, but this guy is a rising star. He is going to be outstanding throughout his Notre Dame career, and he's been good so far this year, but there's a high ceiling for Stasny, and I asked Coach Jackson about the freshman yesterday.
You know, he's always had the skill and ability, the skating ability. You know, one thing people don't recognize, too, is he's really well built. He's strong physically. And so it doesn't matter that he's not 6'2". He's got a body and he's not afraid of confrontation. So it's not like he's a big hitter, but physically he's strong in one-on-one situations at the net front and those type of things. And it was an easy decision for us. I mean, once we knew Bob wasn't playing, to put Spencer up there, and he did a great job, you know, and he played a lot of minutes against the Kotarenko line, and, you know, we'll probably keep him there. you know, and try to use Bobby in maybe in a role that will allow him to be a little bit more offensively minded.
And for you hockey geeks like me, it's interesting because Stastny and Peak can go up against the Pitlick line, which is Minnesota's top offensive line. They have three really, really good lines, so I don't want to leave that out. But Pitlick has been really, really good. That line has been outstanding this year. But Nardella going to the third defensive pair, he will be out there against the weaker Minnesota forward, so you can take advantage of his offensive ability. So it's an interesting little twist to the defense corps with Stastny and Peak staying together. Nardella probably will play with the freshman Nate Klerman, and they'll face a lot of the third and fourth lines for Minnesota. Hmm. So all of a sudden, you might have an offensive advantage trying to break through that 1-4 that you've had difficulties with. Nardella facing the lesser four lines could be something that pays dividends for the Irish tomorrow night. Something to keep in mind.
All righty.
We'll have the game for you on Z94.3 FM. Injured forward Joe Wagworth joined me last week, and he's going to be back in the booth again as we have the game tomorrow night on Z94.3 FM. Pre-game probably at 6:40, and the opening face-off, 7 o'clock, Notre Dame taking on Minnesota with a chance to go to the Big Ten Championship game for a second straight year for Notre Dame. And basically, it's like Indiana, Ohio State yesterday in the Big Ten tournament. Loser is eliminated pretty much from the NCAA tournament. Minnesota for sure. Notre Dame, not officially, but I wouldn't bank on it. So big game. Absolutely. Sports Beat rolls on next from WSBT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Bethel College and Bethel College Athletics offering 29 intercollegiate teams with a faith-based approach on and off the field. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Big Ten Tournament quarterfinals this afternoon. Michigan State 77, Ohio State 70. Wisconsin oust Nebraska 66-62. We'll have the Big Ten Championship game Sunday at 3, followed by the selection show. Saturday at 8 o'clock, it's the ACC Championship game. But Saturday at 3:30, Sean will have the call of the 4A Lafayette semi-state. Penn versus Carmel. Give me a thought.
You know, I think Carmel is the obvious favorite in this game, but I think it's going to be closer maybe than a lot of people think. I had the chance to watch their regional championship game from last week, and really, two teams that really play a pretty similar style. They hit 10 three-pointers in the first half of their win over Zionsville. Penn was bombing threes last night. They both got decent size inside, so I think it's going to be a pretty even matchup tomorrow.
Bottom part of the draw, a lot of losses with the two teams at semi-state. Center Grove, I believe, Ben Davis. Ben Davis has seven losses, but pretty good competition down there.
Absolutely.
As well. Sean will have the call 3:30 tomorrow. Penn and Carmel, the only radio station from the area that will be there. Have a great call.
All right. Have a good one tomorrow night, too.
I'll do my best. Thank you. That's going to do it. Sports Beat, top of the hour, 96.1 WSBT, South Bend.